How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode taking you through this Thursday. And Joe, it's exciting times. We've got Predators hockey later today and also the NBA officially getting back underway tonight in Orlando. And to help us talk more about that, we bring in Jeff Zilgut, who covers the NBA for USA Today. And Jeff, I just got to start off. First off, thank you for coming on with us. But Joe, your friend, has had about 19 cups of coffee today, so he's going to be very energetic.
And I'm right behind you, Joe. Not quite 19, but I'm close.
Well, you know, Jeff, who is the pride of the Michigan State.
Michigan State's everywhere, man.
We definitely slugged some coffee up in East Lansing. And I'm sure you're loving the need for more caffeine and energy and you know, all that comes with basketball coming back, Zilly.
I am. Look, it's been hectic, you know, for not having games for 4 months. This has been incredibly busy because, you know, the COVID storyline has just dominated, you know, so often during the course of this, whether or not the NBA was going to come back, how they're going to do it, what's the plan. You know, early on, I don't think the NBA anticipated, nor did I think anyone really anticipate the idea of, when they suspended the season, when they returned, that they would be in a central location. I think the thinking was is that this was going to disappear to some degree, or at least it would be at manageable levels, and you could resume, you know, traveling around the country. And as we're starting to see, the bubble idea, the bubble theory, seems to be the way to go. And yet I also understand that not every league can, you know, pull off a bubble. You know, maybe Major League Baseball should have been more compelled to try it in, you know, Florida, in Arizona. I understand what's going on in those two states with COVID, but the NBA is managing to pull off a bubble. And you guys probably saw it yesterday. It's the second consecutive testing period, daily testing period for, you know, 14 consecutive days where no player has tested positive for COVID. So they seem to have found a way to, at the very least, keep it to a minimum positive cases. And at best, there's no positive case inside the bubble.
So, Jeff, obviously everybody tonight's really looking forward to that Lakers-Clippers matchup. But how much pop does it kind of take out of the matchup with no Lou Williams, no Montrezl Harrell, no Patrick Beverley? Does it take any of the luster out of it for you, or do you just not care because there's been so long without NBA basketball, we're just ready to get back into it?
No, it's a two-parter for sure. Look, it does not have the same pop as if those two teams were playing a, you know, let's just think of a late regular season game a week before the playoffs begin with those guys missing. Also, just having not played in 4 months, you know, don't forget, we're not as much excited as people are to have sports and basketball back tonight. It's not going to be the best basketball. I don't want to say it's going to be summer league hoops or anything like that, but these guys haven't played 5-on-5 with the kind of regularity that you need to have late season, high-level elite basketball. But that said, you know, look, you want to see the Lakers, LeBron James, how he looks. I mean, he seems to be one guy who is maybe his attitude, his dedication is fit for bubble life. But also, look, we're going to get, you know, Zion Williamson, and then we'll start to see all the other storylines develop. But, yeah, look, the bottom line is I'm super excited to see hoops tonight. You know, if you don't get the pop tonight from that Lakers-Clippers matchup, you know, there's a real good chance that we get it later this summer when those two teams meet in the playoffs.
No doubt. And I agree, obviously, it's going to be a little ragged for a while, Jeff. I've been, you know, watching quite a bit of this. I will say one guy who was not ragged the other day, Ja Morant for the Memphis Grizzlies, just looked surgical, and he looks great. They are an intriguing team. Obviously, around here, a team of interest. First of all, is the Rookie of the Year decision over for you, and what do you think about that team's chances as a potential 8 seed to cause a little trouble?
So, one, the Rookie of the Year race. Look, everyone had to turn in their votes who voted by Tuesday night. So these 8 games that they're playing, not count, which, you know, you can make the argument whether or not you like that idea. But I'll tell you this. Let's just say the NBA allowed those eight games to count. It's unlikely, unless Zion Williamson did something like, you know, 40, 10, and 10, you know, that was off the charts. Ja Morant was getting my vote. I mean, he played all season. Zion Williamson didn't. And he was spectacular from start to finish. I mean, he's a dynamic guard. You guys know this. You know, we're talking about it in a variety of places, but had we seen a guard like this, you know, with such explosiveness and ability to do things since a Russell Westbrook, Derrick Rose type, you know, rookie guards in the NBA. And that's what we're – and those guys won MVPs. They were all-stars, all-NBA performers. And so that's what you're getting in Ja Morant. Now, if you're the Los Angeles Lakers and you're looking at the eighth seed, you probably don't want to play Portland because they're getting all their players back with Jozef Nurkić, Zach Collins, and Damian Lillard, and C.J. McCollum. You probably don't want to play the Pelicans either because they're going to come in with all that hype of Zion Williamson and then the former Lakers, you know, and Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram who played, you know, who now play for New Orleans. And so if you're the Lakers, you probably want Memphis. With that said, Memphis has been a really good team this year and probably surprisingly so with their coach doing a fan. I mean, I know that Taylor Jenkins is not going to win Coach of the Year, but he probably deserves a lot of credit for what he's done with this team, and you can start to see the future of what can happen in Memphis, maybe a little bit faster than people anticipated, especially when you combine Jaren Jackson Jr. into the mix. They're showing an ability to find the right players and build the right way. So you have that. Can Memphis beat the Lakers in a series? No, they can't. But can, you know, in a neutral court situation where the Lakers don't have four home games, is it possible that they could win, you know, a couple games and make this a six-game series and make it interesting? You know, there is that because I think there's going to be a lot of unpredictability in what happens since these teams are, you know, haven't played in so long. And so, look, I don't like Memphis' chances to advance, and yet they're the kind of team that, you know, can upset the Lakers in a game or two and make the series a whole lot more interesting as opposed to they were playing a traditional, you know, home-and-home seven-game series.
Jeff Zilgut on the line with us from USA Today, who covers the NBA. And, Jeff, how much pressure is on the Milwaukee Bucks in this tournament to win or at least to get to the finals, given what's happening with Giannis and his contract decision that he has coming up? He can sign an extension this offseason or become a free agent, I believe, after next season. How much pressure is on the Bucks to get the job done this year?
I think it's one of the overriding storylines that we're going to be following. Now, you know, there's a couple of hometown advantages that Milwaukee has. One, you know, they identified him, you know, earlier than any other team in the process when it comes to the draft. Milwaukee is really the only North American city that he knows, so it is home for him. And so, you know, it's not like he's been on the AAU circuit, grew up here, played college ball here, and has been all over the country. You know, now, obviously playing in the NBA, he's got a chance to do all those things. But your point remains is that Milwaukee is talking about the idea of keeping Giannis for the next four or five seasons, and that automatically makes them a contender in the Eastern Conference for that period. And when you're, you know, a, you know, small market team like Milwaukee, I know the NBA doesn't like that phrase, but I guess a small TV market franchise, when you can be a contender, including this year and last year for seven seasons, that does wonders for a franchise. That means a lot. You know, I don't think Milwaukee has to win it. I think getting to the finals is important in that if he does that, he says, yeah, look, there's the pieces here. The franchise has spent money to keep a guy like Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe, bring in a veteran like Kyle Korver and Brooke Lopez, and have some, and even George Hill is a, you know, underrated sixth man of the year candidate. You get to the finals in that shows him that, yes, we have the ability to do that. You don't get to the finals, it maybe makes him start to wonder whether or not, hey, is there someplace else where I can, you know, get to the finals or win a championship a little bit sooner? So we're going to be talking about that. Look, there's a story I like to tell. After Giannis signed his extension 4 years ago, he looked at his watch, and it's a joking situation, but, you know, he looked as if there's a watch on his hand and was indicating to a high-level executive, you know, you guys are on the clock, okay? You know, the time is ticking, and so, you know, let's get this done. Obviously, 4 years ago, the Bucks have made a lot of progress, but getting to the finals or winning will be huge in impacting his decision to stay with that franchise.
And Jeff, you mentioned earlier about individual awards, and that's one award that the Bucks probably will get if not only the NBA championship, but an MVP trophy for Giannis once again. And do you see Giannis being that front runner? This is a shoe-in. It's a lock for him to win it. Or do you see a guy like LeBron James or James Harden kind of climb up there and win the MVP?
I think this is Giannis's again. I mean, he's had a historical season. He improved over last year. And if you start to drill down a little bit on his numbers, and you know, not even advanced stats or anything like that, but just do his – the Bucks blew out so many teams this year. Giannis, you know, he barely played 30 minutes a game. And so if you look at his per 36 minutes, this is, let's say he was close to 35, 36 minutes a game, and the Bucks weren't blowing teams out, his numbers are even more incredible. You know, it really blows people out of the water. The Bucks were on pace to win 67 games this year. And so he is the best player on the best team in the league and, you know, the best player in the league this season. I love everything LeBron James has done. I've grown to have some appreciation for James Harden's game, even though I'm not always a fan of everything he does. You know, Kawhi Leonard is up there. You have Luka Doncic as well. So there are lots of quality guys, you know, who, you know, you could say they're deserving of the MVP, but I don't think there's anyone more deserving than Giannis.
All right, Jeff, so you're going to the bubble when, and are you stopping for Magic City Wings on the way?
Well, it looks like my flight is nonstop here from the D.C. area, so I'm not in Magic City this time, Joe. Now, with that said, I go into the bubble sometime, you know, between the third week and the end of August. At that point, you begin your seven-day quarantine, and so, you know, you're confined to your room. I'm sure it's going to be a long 7 days, but we all know how, you know, in general, a week flies by and everything, and, you know, you'll find time. There's so many Zoom calls, press conferences to do. You just sort of lock in and get to work, and then your quarantine's over, and you'll be able to roam around the bubble, not freely, but, you know, to the places you're allowed to go and start covering games.
Absolutely. Jeff Zilgit has been our guest from USA Today covering the NBA. Jeff, thanks so much for taking time to come on with us today, man. We really appreciate it. I think Joe is about to run off and get even more coffee.
Robbie and Joe, thanks for having me. And, you know, always love connecting with Joe.
Good talking to you, buddy.
Later, Joe.
Enjoy.
Going to be a really interesting start to the season tonight in the NBA. We'll talk about that a little bit more on the other side of the break. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. That's a good bump choice right there.
Yeah, I think that's
a good bump choice, right? That works well. That worked out pretty well.
I mean, I like that song. So.
Yeah, it's a great song.
It's on my 90s library. It's on there.
Okay.
I like it.
So is Joe like 3 for 3 in the songs he's chosen?
I mean, Joe's always going to be 3 for 3 unless he picks like, you know, right. Informer by Snow.
Oh, MC Snow. I was actually going to make a Vanilla Ice joke, so MC Snow is even better, though.
That's worse. Okay. That is way worse.
Whew. I'll see if I can step my game up. Although, like, some of my songs I pick are just going to be country. Like, that's just the way it is.
All right. I'll give you another category. How about that?
That's fine.
Because country, you really got it. Like, if you would have had Alan Jackson, I would have gave you, like, 2 points. But
really? Yeah. Big Alan Jackson fan, huh?
I'm a huge Alan Jackson fan. Chattahoochee?
That's a jam.
Look, it's like Alan Jackson and Tupac. They're, like, up there with me, even though Alan Jackson's still alive. But Alan Jackson and Tupac.
Yes. We should leave alone who's alive and who isn't.
Well, Alan Jackson, I know.
Rex Rowe's got the kiss of death over here. So,
oh, yeah.
If I see Brian Johnson trending anytime soon.
You're going to have to stop looking things up, man.
Every day there's someone trending, and you're like, okay.
Yesterday was Paul Rudd, wasn't it?
Well, today is Tim Allen.
Oh, God.
Well, what's his deal?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, and Paul Rudd, you're like, okay, did he say something offensive? Does he have COVID? And it was just people.
Yeah, that's the three things that run through your mind. Did he say something offensive?
Did he die?
Does he have COVID, or is he dead?
Yeah, and it was just
that's
like,
our world in 2020.
People were just like, I love Paul Rudd, and he was trending.
Yeah.
How could someone trend from that?
People really love Paul Rudd.
I guess apparently. So. Hey, I like Ant-Man.
I like Paul Rudd. He's good.
This is 40.
Yeah.
It's a good movie. It's good that stuff. Hits home.
Role models. It's good stuff, too.
I haven't seen that one.
That's a deeper cut of Paul Rudd. A lot of Kiss themes in that one, too. It's good stuff. You'd like it.
Kiss? Like the band?
Okay. Yeah.
Check it out.
Well, we had Jeff Zilgit on in the last segment, and I don't know about you guys. I know you are, Munson. I am so much looking forward to the start of the NBA season tonight. Looking forward to watching Predators today, and then I'm going to turn my attention to the NBA. Lakers-Clippers. I don't really know. Like, I'm more excited for the Lakers-Clippers matchup itself, but I am excited for the Pelicans just to watch Zion, who I believe technically is a game-time decision.
Yeah,
but, I mean, he's going to play.
Zion's going to play.
He's going to play.
And it's funny because the way the season ended was because of Rudy Gobert and the Jazz.
Yep.
And now the way the season begins and restarts is the Jazz versus the Pelicans. So, no, I mean, it's going to be a good game between the Pelicans and the Jazz. Jazz already in a playoff position, so they're solidified. But the Pelicans obviously fighting for that eighth seed. And this is a start. These are games that, like, if you're the Pelicans, you got to win because you're going to get Clippers and you're going to get Lakers later. They got an easy schedule, but these are games you got to win against a team like the Jazz, which, I mean, outside of Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, and Mike Conley, maybe, like, they're a pretty vulnerable team. So,
do we think that Donovan Mitchell still, like, hates Rudy Gobert? You remember all that stuff that happened after?
Yes, I think,
like,
he does.
I think you probably just do, like, Rudy
Gobert.
Well,
I think they squashed it, but if you were that reckless with it, I probably would just steer away from you for a while.
Yeah, like, I get being ticked off at the time. I mean, the entire world was, yeah, it was
a little upset.
The moment they showed the, yeah, I was joking around, but they showed the tape recorder thing. I was,
yeah, like, dude,
really?
Come on.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, they can be friends, like, they can be teammates, but they don't have to, like each other. Like,
right.
It's not like a rule where you have to work with somebody and you have to like them outside of work and
right.
On a personal level. So maybe it's just that situation with him. He's just, hey, man, as a teammate, Rudy Gobert is great. He's a defensive player of the year, candidate every year. He's good. But outside of that, don't talk to me. Just leave me alone. You're crazy. You're a crazy person.
Do y'all buy into the talk out there? And some of this just comes directly from what I like to call the LeBron haters. Like, there's a sizable group out there that no matter what LeBron does, they just hate on him. But they're talking about, you know, if the Lakers go on and they win the championship this year, that'll be LeBron's fourth title. But everyone's saying they should put an asterisk next to this one as if it somehow just doesn't mean anything. Do you buy into that at all?
No.
This one's a little different? Because I don't.
Why? That makes no sense.
I know.
Yeah, zero. Because, look, it's especially if a team that we expect wins, the Lakers, Bucks, and Clippers were the favorites going into the playoffs before all this even happened.
Yep.
This is back in November. So, and like, same thing for the Dodgers, Yankees, if they win the World Series. They were the favorite going into it. It's the same thing if the Tampa Bay Lightning win the Stanley Cup. They were the favorite to win it. So, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, if the Kings win it or the Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup, or if the Marlins just so happen to come back and win the World Series, yeah, we'll probably look at it like, probably shouldn't have happened that way. But at the end of the day, you know, and I think Austin Rivers said it best, like, there should be no asterisks because we're playing in probably one of the toughest times in sports,
yeah.
Not only because of COVID, but also everything surrounding the social justice movement. So I think this is the toughest championship you can win. So if the Lakers win, they just win, and you can't hate that. People hate LeBron James.
All right, so let's put it this way then, because let's say, just for the sake of this discussion, the Lakers do win. That's LeBron's fourth championship, as I said, but it's also his third championship with a different franchise. And that's really hard to do. I mean, Kawhi Leonard's trying to do the same thing
with
the Clippers. How does that impact? Because right now, in pretty much, I'm not going to say everybody's mind, but in a lot of people's mind, the discussion with LeBron right now is not really with anybody else. It's just with Michael Jordan. Does this impact, if he wins with a third team, does this impact that discussion at all? Or does he have to win a couple more regardless to even overtake Jordan in, I think, most people's mind?
It's a different time. So to me, that's irrelevant. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
Back then,
players just didn't move.
Players weren't doing what they're doing now. So I don't, it's just what you do. And look, Jordan, obviously 6-0 in the finals. Jordan also they won those championships at, frankly, a time when there just wasn't another great challenger to them.
Yeah, I mean that's Supersonics. Not that great. They were good. Gary Payton was great. You know, Sean Kemp.
And the Jazz teams were very good. And I mean, I think the best of those teams, like that, I actually thought that Suns team in 93 was going to win it. Barkley was the MVP. KJ, Marley, that was a great team. And they should have beat the Bulls. They didn't. But you also look at that, too. I mean, people compare LeBron's finals record, but he also, the fact that he was in there the first time with Cleveland was ridiculous on its own.
But they're going to create that same narrative with LeBron and his championships because they beat Oklahoma City, which they were a young team at the time, young KD, young Russell Westbrook, young James Harden. Right.
They hadn't matured yet.
Yeah, they haven't matured yet. Then they beat the Spurs, and then that's a championship.
That's a legit
championship because the following year the Spurs spanked them.
Yeah.
And then you win a championship with Cleveland. Cleveland's never won a championship, and not to mention you beat a team that went 73-9.
Yeah.
So you're not going to lose
in five if Draymond doesn't get popped for this stupid
thing.
But
yeah, I say the same thing.
You won.
But you still won. So I think, look, I don't think LeBron needs to get six just like Jordan. I think LeBron is a dynasty of his own. It's not the Jordan dynasty that he's following. Everywhere LeBron goes is a championship team. Every year, it's always a LeBron NBA Finals, except for last year when LeBron was hurt.
Yeah.
And it's always been a LeBron NBA Finals. He is a dynasty of his own. This guy took a crappy Cleveland team that had Drew Gooden and Ilgauskas and Anderson Varejao and Larry Hughes to an NBA Finals, beating the Detroit Pistons, and then got swept by the Spurs, but still took that team to an NBA Finals.
When you look at that roster, it's incredible.
It is incredibly awful. I always thought that the 2001 76ers team with AI was bad, but at least they had Mutombo, who was like a defensive player of the year, and they had a sixth man of the year on that team as well. So, and then also Eric Snow, who is a legend in Philadelphia.
That's my guy.
That's my guy, Eric Snow. That is my guy. But LeBron is his dynasty of his own. He doesn't need to solidify his status amongst the LeBron Jameses. He is, in my era, the top tier guy. And this is coming from a huge Kobe fan. Like, he is top of the line.
Wait, so you have him as the top player ever over Jordan?
Over Jordan? No.
No?
I mean, I'm always going to take Jordan. But we're always talking about different eras, too. And, you know, back then when Jordan played, there were multiple teams that were dynasties of their own. The Detroit Pistons, the Lakers,
and those
the Celtics.
Teams kicked his butt.
Yeah. Well, hey, come on. I mean, he eventually got by when they got old.
Yeah.
when they all got old. But that's not the point.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a different league. And I think in this era, like, Bill Russell, I think, is one of the best basketball players ever. But in his era, you know, Larry Bird was the best in his era. Michael Jordan, the best in his era. Yeah, so you take it.
You got Larry. I mean, I don't think Larry Bird.
It's either Larry. It's either Larry or Magic. So it's one of the two. And so every era has its greatest player of all time. And I think when we talk about this one, it's LeBron James. And people who I know the real reason why people don't like LeBron James, and I'll probably tell you off air because I can't say it off air. I think I know the real reason why people don't like LeBron James, but you can't hate the fact that this guy is a champion everywhere he goes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's even debatable that he's the best player of this era, but, I mean, there is a discussion of greatest of all time. I think centers get – I'm glad you brought up Bill Russell because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has a case too.
Absolutely.
And he never gets discussed in that. It's almost like you have a separate category for centers with Wilt Chamberlain, you know, but I think Shaquille O'Neal should have been the best player.
Oh, yeah, easy. Yeah. But would you put, like for example, would you put Joe Montana and Tom Brady in that same discussion?
Well, yeah. I mean, some people say, no, Johnny Unitas is the greatest quarterback of all time, and that's that. I mean, you're right that you really probably should do it by air, but it's not as much fun. So we'll just – we will argue Jordan LeBron forever and ever.
Maybe
LeBron will make it obvious before he's done, but there is a lot of people that are never going to move off Jordan.
Like, if he wins – two or three more championships at age 35 plus, and is playing at this level while he does it. I mean, that's a pretty compelling argument to me.
That's pretty strong.
I mean, he won Cleveland a championship. That's hard to do.
That road
in any sport.
Yeah, no. And that road win, at Boston, what, 3 years ago, two, 3 years ago? I remember that night saying, yeah, he might be better than Jordan after that. Like, he carried that team. He's had a lot of moments like that where I think he's definitely got a case.
All right, real quickly, who do we think is the biggest challenger to the Bucks in the East?
I'm going to say the Celtics. That's Celtics. Easy. Celtics are good. I have the Celtics. If not Bucks, I have Celtics going to the NBA Finals.
Okay.
But, y'all, I mean, 76ers as well. They're healthy.
But you never know what, like, 76ers at home, I think, were 29-2. On the road, they were, like, 10-30. Like,
also, yeah.
So it's a non-factor,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and also, don't sleep on the Raptors. Well, Raptors are good.
And that's the thing. Like, no one's going to say the Raptors, right?
Without Kawhi.
But they're still pretty good.
Yeah.
But,
Nick Nurse will win Coach of the Year this year.
Yeah, I would agree with Celtics. How about some Brooklyn Nets rising up and shocking some people?
Yeah, it's Miami Heat.
I don't even
say that with straight face.
They're probably not even going to make the playoffs. Here's the bad thing. The 8 seed is either going to be the Wizards or the Nets.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be your 8 seed
in
this playoffs.
We got the Magic. The Magic are in that spot right now.
Well, the Magic are in 7 right now, they're at 8, but yeah, eventually the Nets are going to climb or drop down to 8. Like, that's a no-brainer. So it's going to be between the Nets.
They don't really have anybody left to play, do they? Like,
no.
Kyrie?
No.
That's it.
Kyrie? Not even Kyrie.
Yeah. They have nobody. So it's going to be a pretty quick loss. When we come back, we'll dive back into hockey. Preds and Stars tonight. That's up next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Predators head coach John Hines on yesterday with Darren, Donick, and Chase. And some interesting comments there, Joe, talking about just how you're evaluating this Predators team before they kick things off later today and then for real on Sunday against the Arizona Coyotes. I think some encouraging parts of what he said there. You know, there have been some guys that picked right up where they left off, and that's a good thing. There have been guys who have been way better than they were before the pause. But there have also been some players that have not quite been as good throughout this training camp process as they were before the pause. So today's game is all about, I think, just trying to see where you're at, determine whether or not there are any adjustments you need to make before you head into that game against Arizona. More than anything, just get people feeling confident. Get people playing against somebody else, having a little success, not necessarily dominating a game, but feeling good about your game heading into Arizona. I think that's going to be crucial before game one comes on Sunday.
Do you have any feel for whom? Like, did you look out there and say, this guy has taken a step backward?
Well, you know, it's hard to tell in these scrimmages. I didn't really get a great feel for that. Now, you know, you try to maybe do some deductive reasoning. I mean, Trennan was in the lineup before. He's not now. Blackwell was in the lineup pretty regularly before. He's not now. Now, does that have to do with the way they've been playing, or is Austin Watson just kind of getting that first crack at the opportunity? I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that question is. It did seem, though, that by and large, Hines is pretty encouraged with what he's seen so far in training camp. Now, again, it's easy to be encouraged when you're playing against yourself. I think today we're going to find out a little bit more about exactly where the Predators are at.
Yeah, and those guys you mentioned, I mean, really, it was from the start that he went with Watson, right? Yeah. So I think that's definitely an area to look at in terms of, I understand the experience, the physicality, the hope that, you know, everybody's a little bit banged up by the time you're 65 games into a hockey season, right? It's like, maybe it's not quite like an NFL season where you know everyone's like close to the IR by November. But with a guy like Austin Watson with that kind of break, heal up, get the energy back. You want to give him a look, but I could see it being a quick look if it doesn't work out.
Oh, yeah.
You've got some other options.
No question about it. And you know, we've talked about Duchesne a lot today. We've talked about Johansson a lot throughout this week. Forsberg is the guy to me that, you know, I thought he was good this season. He wasn't great. I didn't think that he had particularly, you know, these long stretches where he was a dominant player like we've seen him have before. I mean, you look at his numbers and they're okay. I think he had 21 goals throughout the season, which for him, you know, he was getting a little hot towards the end. So who knows? He could have ended up with, you know, 25, 26, 27 goals, and that's about normal as to where he ends up. But we just talked earlier in the show about how I think there's another level that he can get to. And traditionally, in the playoffs, I mean, Forsberg has been a guy that they've been able to rely on. I mean, you take a look at some of his numbers in the playoffs. They're really good. I think he's got 23 career goals in the playoffs. So he's a guy that when the moments get big for this team, like I said before, I think he's the one forward that they have that can totally put a team on his back. I think Johansson can to a certain extent, like we saw that in 2017, but you're never really getting like the, hey, we're down two goals, I'm going to go score them from Johansson. He might set them up, but I don't know if he's ever going to be out there, you know, scoring a hat trick to get you back in a game. Forsberg, to me, is the one guy they have that I think at a moment's notice can take over a game, at least from their forwards. I mean, Roman Josi could do it as well.
I think for Preds fans, it would be a little bit of a letdown if that line doesn't produce a goal today. Like, yeah. I think that's one thing people would love to see. They'd love to see those guys together look like the old days, which aren't that old,
right.
Aren't that long ago, but kind of build on what we've been saying we saw in the training camp, which the main change for, you know, was Arvidsson looking healthy. But certainly Forsberg, that is of those three guys, he is the one that you feel most assured will do something in a playoff series. That's why the last playoff series they had against this team was really disappointing, you know, from that perspective, because that's the first time, at least in a long time for him, that he didn't kind of step forward and do at least something offensively to help carry the team.
And I'm glad you brought up Arvidsson, because, you know, there's kind of an opinion on Arvidsson throughout a lot of the Predators fan base. Of course, they love him. They love everything about him, the hustle that he brings, the tenacity that he plays with, especially when he's healthy on a shift-by-shift basis. But you look at his playoff numbers, I mean, they're not all that great. I mean, in 2017, they're okay. He had 13 points, 22 games, just 3 goals. You know, 5 goals, 4 assists, 9 points in 13 games in 18. Last year, nothing. No points on the board in 6 games. And people wonder, okay, when you watch him play, that energy that he brings every night, usually the fastest guy on the ice, usually the guy showing the most intensity, the most hustle. Some people argue, okay, well, that happens in the regular season, but once you're in the playoffs, everybody else is playing at that level as well. Does his size, is his size a disadvantage for him at that point? And I think, particularly in this series against Arizona, I don't think that's going to be much of a factor. Arizona doesn't really strike me as this like physically imposing, bruising team. Like, I'm sure they're going to try to hit Victor Arvidsson as much as they can, but I feel like in this matchup specifically against the Coyotes, it should lend itself to where Arvidsson, if healthy and with that burst of speed, he should be able to create some opportunities for himself.
Yeah, but I think that's a totally fair critique. Maybe it's oversimplifying, but if you're an Arvidsson hater, you can say, yeah, the regular season he leaks out over here and gets behind everybody, gets some cheapies. It's just not the same level of intensity. You just don't have that consistent defensive focus that you see in a playoff series, and you get into that and all of a sudden the bodies are coming with more frequency, with more intensity, and a guy like that fades a little bit. I mean, I think there's got to be at least some truth in that. At the same time, he's still a guy who can make a difference, and he's got to overcome that. I mean, he's got to be able to find a way, certainly, to do a lot more than he did the last time this team took part in a playoff series.
Yeah, and I think that goes for all three of those guys on that line. Like, there's got to be some sort of, I don't want to say internal pressure, but internal motivation from those three to, look, you guys have all been paid. You've all been given long-term contracts to be. I remember when they signed Ryan Johansson. I think he was the last one to get signed through all this. I said, they've got their first line in place for the next 5, 6, 7 years. That's largely been the case, but we saw it at times this year. They weren't playing well enough to justify leaving those three together. I think there's got to be some sort of internal motivation on their part to prove, number one, hey, we belong together. We belong playing together. And number two, we're good enough to get the job done when it matters the most in playoff high-pressure situations like this.
Absolutely. I mean, look, Arvidsson and Forsberg, to me, are still pretty team-friendly deals. I think David Poile for the most part, has gotten some pretty good bargains on a lot of these players. Now, at some point, sometimes bargains don't look like bargains, you know, after a period of time. But, you know, Johansson's a guy who he got paid and paid well.
Yeah.
And if you're looking at any of the three who really, really need to show something here, he's the one.
I think so, too. And look, I put Matt Duchene in this category as well. I mean, he's a guy, he's making the same money that Ryan Johansson is making. He's getting paid $8 million a year. Did not have that great of a season in the regular season with the Predators, 13 goals. Like, you would expect the rate of goals scored to be higher than that, especially when you're talking about a guy that just last year scored 30. So that motivation we talked about with Johansson and Forsberg and Arvidsson, I would expect that to be there from Duchene as well. And he's playing on a line where you're talking about Turris. Things have not gone well for him in Nashville here for the most part. He's got to have that as well. Duchene in the year he had. And then Granlund is about to be an unrestricted free agent. So there are some dollar signs that could be motivating his play as well. So I say that to say you feel pretty good about the effort level being there. But more importantly, if there's going to be a time where all six of those guys are executing at a high level, I feel okay about this being that time because of everything that's at stake and on the line.
Right. And again, there's that third line that has quietly been the most reliable. Speaking of Turris, there's a really nice picture of four of the five members of the Turris family at theathletic.com right now. So the Preds family's outside the bubble story just published.
Nice.
I know you're very excited about
it. I am excited about it. There's a great line by Julie Turris in this that you're going to want to read. I'll leave it at that, but there's a great line by Julie Turris that you're going to want to read in Rex Road's story that just came out. When we come back, we'll continue the Preds discussion and wrap up the show. But first, don't miss a second of the action as the Preds return this Sunday and face the Arizona Coyotes. Watch party viewing destinations include Burger Republic and Party Foul. Stop by Burger Republic in Lenox Village or Mount Juliet and enjoy the Forsberger for a limited time and $4 Happen Harry's pints. Party Foul locations are at Cool Springs Galleria in Franklin and in Murfreesboro off Broad Street, in Donelson off Lebanon Pike, and downtown in the Gulch. Wear your gold and bring the noise to root on the Preds. And remember, Party Foul and Burger Republic will be following the social distancing guidelines. So keep that in mind if you're coming out to the watch parties. We'll be right back. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Predators head coach John Hines talking about the game plan today against the Dallas Stars. And Joe, one interesting part he brought up there that I forgot to mention earlier. In this game specifically, you can dress 13 forwards and 7 defensemen. So an extra forward and an extra defenseman is available to you. Interesting to see, number one, who those forwards are. But number two, it doesn't really mean that one's going to be in tomorrow or Sunday or whatever the case may be. I'm more interested in the goalies and how he splits time there. Like he said, you know, they're going to try to play the forwards and the skaters, you know, as close to normal as possible to a degree. Like, you're not going to play Roman Josi 30 minutes against the Stars. It serves no purpose. There's no reason to do that. I do think the way the goalies either trot out there today and whoever starts, but also especially how long they play, is going to tell me something. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it's going to tell me something.
Yeah, of course, then he'll play Saros the whole game, and then he'll just start Pekka
on
Sunday.
Just make sure he's ready to go.
Yeah, it's just all about making sure he's rested.
He's fresh.
But, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and read into that. I am going to do that. And maybe it'll be just a total split and keep everybody guessing. I don't know. Is there how much of a benefit is there if you're the Predators – to keep the Coyotes guessing? I mean, it's different scouting reports going against each guy, I guess, right? But
yeah, but
they know both guys.
It's not like you got to change the scouting report on the fly. Like, if Saros is in net, the entire league scouting report on him is, hey, he's a smaller goaltender. Let's see if we can get our shots up high and beat him over the shoulder. Like, so it's not like you have some sort of game plan reversal once you get out there and see him. Like, oh, it's Saros in net. Let's try to shoot it high. Pekka, scouting report, hey, don't shoot it on his glove side. He's probably going to stop it.
So is there any benefit in, I guess, publicly announcing for your team or for your two goalies, this is what we're doing? Or is it just like, eh, just wait until you guys can just see it when they skate out Sunday?
I don't know if there's any benefit to it. Like, you know, but, you know, hockey coaches, they're weird, man. They just do their thing.
Well, like Laviolette, for example.
Like Laviolette, we would never know, ever.
Oh, I mean, the Stanley Cup final, it was begging for him to just be like, guys, shut up. Pekka Rinne's the starter. And honestly, I don't think any of us who cover the Predators regularly were even asking the question.
No,
I could
like
be
we
wrong,
knew Pekka was going to start.
But the national and Canadian media were asking it every day after he got shelled in game two.
And he never said anything about it.
I know. It's just say, come on, please.
You want people to shut up about it. Say, yeah,
sometimes,
start.
Yeah, sometimes there's a benefit to actually piping up. Yeah, you may think you're giving in, but actually it quiets down a bunch of stupid noise that shouldn't even be out there. So that's not the same thing as this.
No.
But I'm always in favor of just tell us what the heck is going on.
Well, of course we are. But
of course.
We have very selfish reasons.
I'm a little
that.
Bit biased.
Yeah, there's no question about it. What are you looking for? Like, what are two or three things that you want to see from the Predators? Not necessarily like from an execution standpoint today, but what do you want to see from the Predators that lets you know that they're on the right track and you feel good about them beating Arizona in this series?
Well, the power play is huge. So I know that there's been a lot of work on it, and John Hines came in and changed some things up. But again, you're on the fly. You're coming in cold, trying to figure out this team. You don't really have time to mess around. Now they've had a lot of time to mess around. And we saw them working on some interesting things with that in the practices at Bridgestone. So that's where I start. How does that look? And certainly, I know it's obvious, but just, yeah, those top two lines, are they going to look like they've been playing hockey together for a while and that they're game ready? And I guess – I mean, I'm just going to keep going down the obvious list.
That's okay.
You know, looking at the goalies, I mean, it's just Pekka Rinne, I think, it has got to have some kind of a role in this thing if it's going to last any length of time. But UC Saros is a guy I think will start, I think should start, and we're going to find out with him. He has had some bad starts to seasons lately, which is a different deal. But the playoff pressure, he has not yet faced. He's come in relief when Pekka Rinne's had bad games in the playoffs.
Right.
So that is – and it's not like today is necessarily going to tell you a lot there. But still, I think you feel better if you're the Predators and if you're a Predators fan if he plays well.
No question about it. Another thing, kind of what we talked about a little bit yesterday that I'm going to be watching pretty intently, I feel good about Yossi Nellis, obviously. They had – I would argue, and the Predators have had a lot of really good defense pairings over the years. When they were together this year, I think Yossi and Ellis may have had the best year as a pairing as they've ever had. And that's saying something. I mean, there's been Suter and Weber, Ekholm, Subban. I mean, they've had a lot of really good pairings here in Nashville. So I feel good about those two. Dante Fabbro is a guy I'm going to be watching really closely. And the reason for that is, you know, he's a 21-year-old rookie this year. He's 22 now. Really elevated responsibility going from playing, you know, six games in the NHL on the third pairing, 11 minutes a night in a playoff series to an entire season's worth of top four responsible minutes. Can he handle that at this stage? Not even necessarily today, but more importantly, as we get into the series against Arizona, where your matchups are different. It's a high pressure situation in the playoffs. There's more of a physical nature to the game in the playoffs. Can Dante Fabbro handle being alongside Matthias Ekholm and the challenges that come with that physical aspect of playing in the playoffs? Because, you know, you're 22 years old. Fabbro's a stout guy, but he's still, I think, got some room to grow in terms of his physical development and being fully NHL ready. So I'm interested to see what progress he's made through the pause and if he looks like any different of a player on a more consistent basis, because there were times this year where I thought he was fine. He looked really good. There have been times where he's had some of those rookie mistakes as well. Can he minimize those mistakes as they move forward? Going to be watching that really intently.
So who's the 13th forward, Trennan?
That's a good question. Is it Trennan or Blackwell, I guess? I would go Trennan, but I'm interested to see what Hines does. And if it is Trennan, like, does that tell you even more that Watson's probably on a short leash? Because – Trennan,
like the younger version.
He's like the younger version.
And, ways.
You know, he's probably more offensively gifted than Austin Watson is. But they play a similar game in terms of, you know, that straight line, not afraid to, no pun intended, just come up and punch you in the mouth if they have to. Like, that's something that Trennan has. So, if it's Blackwell, then maybe it's just a different style of game than Watson. So, I don't want to read too much into who the 13th forward is going to be, but I think if it is Trennan, maybe that does tell you that Watson better be on his game or it's going to be a pretty quick leash.
Does Tolvanen have a chance here at some point?
I think the only way Tolvanen has a chance is if somebody in the top six gets hurt and they're out for a pretty significant amount of time. Because to me, if you're going to play Tolvanen, it almost serves no purpose to play him on the fourth line. Like, right. He's just not going to produce
that. That's not him.
So if you're going to play Tolvanen, I think it's got to be in the top six. It's probably got to be on the power play to utilize that shot. Other than that, like, unless, you know, somebody really important gets hurt, I kind of doubt that he's going to have much of a role. But it's nice to have him there because he's a guy, world-class shot. He's got a great shot. Yeah. The struggle with him has been figuring out how to get open to use it. So that's
physicality and just explosiveness, right?
Yeah. And I know a lot of Predators fans just feel like Tolvanen's like some bust. He's like 21 years old. He's still got some time figured out. The skill set's there. He looks a lot better from a physical in-shape standpoint this year than he ever has. So I don't think he's that far away. I really don't. He picked it up a little bit toward the end of the year with Milwaukee. Started slow, but
you know, it may be, I mean, look, it may be next year.
Maybe.
There's no choice. Like, okay, he's a top six forward on this team, depending on how things shake out.
Yeah, and from a financial standpoint, I mean, that's going to have to be something that you keep in mind because Yossi's contract kicks in next year, and you got a whole lot of money tied up in this team. So at some point, you're going to need those entry-level contracts to kick in. Well, Joe, that's going to do it for us today, my friend. Man, we finally have like a loaded sports day. Predators hockey later today. Pre-game begins at 2 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The NBA later tonight. It feels good to say that.
Yes, it does. Set a record for coffee consumption today.
Absolutely. Good show, boys. We'll be back tomorrow. Darren, Donick, and Chase coming up next. We'll be back tomorrow at 6 a.m. This has been Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.